Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs. This week, we're talking about organ donation in the Black community with NHS organ donation. So people from BAME communities represent only 8% of all deceased donors last year, but 31% of people on the transplant waiting list are ethnic minorities. So there is huge disparity between what is needed and what's actually available. In today's episode, we're going to try and discuss some of the preconceptions and the stigma and myths around organ donation, as well as give you some of the hard facts and try and have a conversation about how we can effectively, you know, have these conversations in our family and friendship circles. And later in the show, we'll be hearing from Rachel Rosen, Regional Manager of the London Organ Donation Team. So to kick things off, guys, what do you know, or what comes to mind when you think about organ donation?
That little game.
Oh, doctor.
That game where it's like the body.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you like put your...
What's it called again?
You have the silver thing and you put
operation.
Your thing around it.
Operation.
That one.
That comes to mind when you think of organ donation.
Someone just cutting over your belly.
Okay. Leanne, what do you think about?
That is such a morbid thought. Well, obviously, I've discussed this on the podcast before, but I am an organ donor. So that's obviously what immediately comes to mind, is just kind of going back through that experience, that kind of flashback moment, I guess, for me. Mm. So yeah, it's something that I'm actually really... I get really excited talking about it because I think it's such an important... thing for people to be aware of. I think a lot of people, especially in the Black community, is something that we don't discuss. So, yeah.
So, for those who aren't familiar, do you want to talk a bit about your actual donation and how that happened and why it happened?
Yeah, sure. So, my mom was diagnosed with kidney failure in 2003. So, I was in my going into my second year of undergrad. And I guess for transparency, the reason that she developed kidney failure was because my mom had like arthritis and gout for pretty much as long as I can remember. So she was on like really strong doses of ibuprofen. So for anybody who depends on pills for pain medication, it's probably not a good idea. So in 2003, she was diagnosed and she was on dialysis for a while. Randomly... got a blood transfusion, kind of a routine thing, and there were antibodies in the blood transfusion that she got. And so my brother and sister and I had been getting tested at the time. And
sorry,
I was
just quickly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How was when you get a blood transfusion? What the hell? Sorry, when you get a blood transfusion, isn't that for you to get clean? You're talking about dialysis.
No, this is just like she needed blood because she had an incident, I think, where she had some internal bleeding.
So don't they check what the blood did they put
in? Yeah, they should, but, you know, sometimes in places they don't filter it properly, or it was a kind of anomaly. It's not something that normally happens or always happens. Yeah, usually, and this filters into the issue of blood donation as well. Usually what happens is that they get the blood, they filter it, make sure that the antibodies are clear. I don't actually know the details of why she got unfiltered blood, and I don't want to say where she got it from, but it created an issue because what happened was that while all three of us were matches, there were foreign antibodies that weren't compatible with us that were introduced into her body. And so we actually went through this process, or she went through this process called plasmapheresis, which is essentially where they filter your blood. It takes like 6 hours per session, and then you filter out your blood. They essentially empty your blood, clean it, and then put it back in. And then in 2006, that enabled us in 2006, July, I believe it was, for me to give her a kidney. That's kind of the beginning and the end summary of the story.
Well, thank you so much for... I'm sure, like, we'll obviously get back to that, and there'll be loads of questions that I think we'll want to answer. But, I mean, like, what do you guys think are some of the biggest myths around organ donation?
I think there are loads. It's interesting. When we were going through the process, we had to do a lot of, like, we had to go to counselling, make sure we were kind of emotionally and psychologically prepared. And then we went through training sessions where we got like step-by-step advice about or information about what exactly would happen from beginning to end. And we did that with other people and other families who were either considering donation or, you know, still on dialysis, but waiting on the list, the donor list. And loads of things, like loads of people were afraid that their organs were going to get given away to somebody else. If they did donate a kidney or if they did not donate an organ, lots of people. I remember my mom, actually, one of the first questions that she asked when we were going through this process was, would her personality change because because she was getting an organ from a foreign person, from a foreign body.
I've seen that,
you know?
In like cartoons.
My auntie that I spoke about before on the Young Carers episode, she had to get a kidney transplant as well because she had dialysis. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I asked her hella questions, and that was one of them. Like, what are you going to call your kidney? Like, what? She named it, you know. I think she named it.
What did she name it?
Something dead as well, like some stupid name, like Trudy or some.
Trudy!
Shout out Trudy.
Trudy the kidney.
It was just some random name that I didn't understand why that was being. What I was being given.
Yeah, but it's crazy, right? Because we're all like, my mom, who was a judge, like very kind of well informed about stuff, had no clue anything about organ donation. So I don't think it's like educated or not educated. I think people just have to do the research, you know, yeah, and really kind of dispel the myth for themselves.
Because I'm not sure if it's an actual myth or not, but I know that, like, I've heard a lot of people say that if you put yourself on the waiting list for it, obviously the law's changing, but right, if you put yourself on the waiting list for it and then you're in hospital and you're ill. No, this sounds so silly.
That they'll try to kill you after.
They'll try to kill you to kill.
No, it's a real thing. That's not a real thing, but I think it's a real fear that people have. And to be honest, I don't know if it's an unreal or an invalid fear, because I think there is this huge mistrust of the NHS by
black people. Yeah.
And there is good reason for that, because personally, I can say that every experience that I've had in an NHS setting, I've not been treated well. Mm. And I would largely say that's probably on some level because I'm a black woman. Mm. You know, there is this presumption similar to what we were talking about when people are giving birth, that we're more tolerant to pain, mm-hmm, that we have higher thresholds. So I think there is this, like, as you said, this myth. But the truth of it is that not anybody can give anybody a kidney.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm. You have to have blood type matches. You have to have tissue matches. You have to be a certain weight. Well, if you're deceased, that's less of an issue. If you're, if we're talking about living versus deceased donations, it's different. But for deceased donations, you have to have a matching tissue. For any donation, you have to have a matching tissue and blood type. So if you go in randomly, they're not going to just be able to take a kidney out and give it to some random white man, unless there's a tissue and blood type match, which is commonly more, the matches are commonly more found amongst people who are of similar races. So if that's your concern, I think it's one that if we just look up the research and the stats, it will show that that's not a valid fear to have.
Mm. Roshan, has organ donation ever come up in your family? Like, is it something you've ever talked about? I mean, obviously you mentioned your aunt, but I mean,
yeah,
has it ever come up as a conversation like, oh, would you do it? I don't know.
Not really, because obviously I speak about my aunt a lot, so I'm really, really close to her. So it's kind of just been something that's been really natural in the conversation. Mm-hmm. So I think when she had dialysis for a really long time, and when she told me that she needed to get a kidney transplant, I was like, oh, can I do it? Because in my head it's just like, it's life or death, I'm saving my aunt. What
of
do you
course.
Mean? And like, I think there's a lot of misconceptions around it, and a lot of people have the varied reasons for why they don't want to be an organ donor or whatever. But when it really hits home and it's someone that you really care about, I don't really think you will think twice. Because when I'm watching my aunt, like, what's the hell, it's every other day, innit? Well, I think everyone has different types, but she used to go every other day, and then she's literally sitting down for time just getting, like, this blood thing. Like, it was like, it had a massive impact on her mental health. So when you're watching that, you're only going to want to be there as the piece to the problem. Do you get what I mean? So I think because of that, we spoke about it a lot as a family, because it was kind of like, well, what can we do to help? And then I remember my dad was going to do it, but that's why I said the weight thing.
Oh yeah,
well, that's quite big. But he was going to do it, and then he was like, okay, I need to lose lots of weight to be able to do it. And his weight was just doing madness, up down, up down, up down, up down. So nothing ever happened from it. So I think in my family experience, it's quite, my family's quite liberal in general, though, so
Yeah, I think just to touch on what Shan said, it's true. I think people think that dialysis is a permanent solution, and it's really not. Like, dialysis is really difficult on the person that goes through it. And yeah, it is usually like every other day, some people every day, dependent on how poor their kidneys are functioning. You have to go in for several hours, and it is essentially like they're filtering your blood, because they're filtering everything, all of the kind of toxins out of your system, etc. And it leaves people really drained. Their emotions are really low. I mean, my mom used to literally leave court, go to get her dialysis, go back to court, and at the end of the day she was just completely, completely drained and exhausted. So it's definitely not, and it doesn't resolve the issue of the poor kidney function.
And it's so isolating. You're just chilling, like. Ding, ding, ding,
ding, ding. Not only that, but it's a scary situation, because you usually exactly. I was just going to say there are people around you that are probably sicker than you. So you're like, you know, you walk in and you might be relatively okay, whereas people are like being wheeled in. There are people that are practically on their deathbed. My
aunt,
like
my aunt, I remember, she was, there was times she kept seeing people getting kidney transplants, like one after the other. And she's like, oh, when's it going to be my time? But there's also times when it was actually just people dying. Mm-hmm. And they're people that you make friends with, because you have your regular slot. So she, I think, was always at 4 o'clock or whatever time it was. And she'd always go there for that time. And it's like your best friend at work. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, you got your best friend every day, and then she gets a new job.
And then she's gone. But really, the reason that she's gone is because
she's dead. Like, that's crazy, man. It's such a sad thing. But even if you look at like DJ Ace from One Extra, seeing him go on to Channel 4 and like speak openly about how much he needs a kidney, I don't know, man. That's so deep. This is actually like literally life or death. And I think it's hard when it comes to donations, because obviously I'm talking about kidneys specifically.
Yeah.
Then we have two of them.
Yeah, but even with your liver, you can give a part of your liver away. You don't have to give away the whole thing. And your liver regenerates. I think pretty much any organ that you have, lungs included, you can donate a part of it and still lead a relatively normal lifestyle. Mm.
Mm. So how is your aunt now? Like, how is she doing now?
Well, she's been doing fine with the kidney transplant. And obviously it's helped her a lot, because I've seen like her be able to be more mobile, not have to always be in hospital. But she's got like other stuff wrong with her. So it's like, it's never ending experience. That was like one cure. And then like now her kidney's starting to fail, like it's starting to reject. So now she's gonna end up having to go onto the list again. Because the one that she has now isn't working anymore. Do you get what I mean?
How long has she had the transplant?
I can't remember, but not that long.
Okay.
Not that long. Maybe like 3 years, I think.
Because when my, after we did the kidney transplant, my mom's started to reject my kidney as well, like almost within the first 6 months. And what they did was that we had to have plasmapheresis again, or she had to have plasmapheresis again to kind of, again, get rid of the antibodies that were trying to attack the kidney. And after that, you know, she was good. She was fine. I mean, obviously, as like you said, my mom had gout and arthritis and stuff like that, and subsequently got cancer. But I think it definitely improved her quality of life for sure. And when you think about, as you said, celebrities, whether it's DJ Ace or there was a famous basketball player who got a kidney from someone years ago. I can't remember who it was. It wasn't Hakeem Olajuwon. I can't remember who it was. But he went back to playing basketball. You know, and so you see the difference that it makes in people's lives. Even when it's, I always said this, even when people talk about me giving my mom a kidney, and I'd be like, yeah, but if it was anybody that I knew, why wouldn't I? Because I can live without the one, and the limited risk that I have relative to the impact that it's going to have on somebody else, for me, makes it worthwhile.
What's your thoughts on it?
So my aunt, who I've mentioned before, that's had cancer 3 times. The first time she got cancer, she needed a bone marrow transplant. And my dad was just like, I'll do it. Like, it was, like you said, it wasn't even like you had to think twice about it. It was like, that's my sister. Like, I'm coarse. And they were really like, are you sure? Do you want to go home and think about it overnight? Get all the relevant information. He was like, no, like, we could do it right now. Like,
and I'm ready.
I'm ready, honey. Like, split my back up. But I think, like you said, if it, like, you know, it really does become real when it is family. And it's actually quite, you know, it's not to get stoppy, but it is a beautiful thing. This idea that, like, you can give someone else life almost. Like, you could give someone you have enough health in your body to give someone else an opportunity. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think it's something to ever take for granted, really.
Yeah, it's funny, especially with bone marrow, actually, because it needs to be a fact. Like, literally, when people have, like, leukemia or bone cancer, they take the bone marrow out.
This was her spine.
Yeah, so
it was literally a part of her spine.
So they suck the bone marrow out of your bone, and then, I guess,
So, you know, okay, you don't eat a rib. You don't eat meat anymore.
But I know what you mean, though.
Yeah, and you know there's that chewy bit at the ends. That's the marrow.
You eat too close to the bone.
Girl, we black! We eat the whole thing! But you know you have like the... You
the
have
black bit inside?
Yeah, that's bone
that's marrow.
Oh, yeah. So if you need a bone marrow transplant, you need the black bit transplant.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, but it has to be, the match has to be so close for you to be able to get a bone marrow transplant successfully that it almost always has to come from a family member.
Mm.
I think it is a really beautiful thing. And it's something that I don't think I really acknowledged. Like, it's something that I was almost, like, not ashamed of, but, you know, you don't really ever want to, like, toot your own horn. And you do think, like, oh, it's something.
I say my mama. Like,
what did you do for your mama?
Nothing. Because it's something that you just think you should do, right? Like, yeah. It's something that you feel like is part of your obligation. Like, this woman has raised you and given you life. But it's, like, a really empowering thing. And you find that actually studies show that the psychological well-being of donors significantly improves after giving being a donor or becoming a donor.
So
because
we all need to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a really personal choice, and I understand there are people who don't want to do it because of religion, and it is a scary thing, or it can be a scary thing for some people. So I really think that people need to do the research. That's probably the most important thing. Like, whatever decision it is that you come to, particularly in light of the new legislation, which is an automatic opt-in.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
So basically, if you don't sign up, if you don't opt to sign out when you die, if you die, your organs will automatically go somewhere else.
What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I think it's a practical consideration. I think it makes sense. Mm. Like, I don't have a problem. I'm dead. So for me, you know, I've already given one when I'm alive. I certainly don't have a problem with one. Instead of my, instead of my organs just lying there when they could save somebody else's life. Mm. But I do think that there are considerations. Like I said, religion, I get that a lot of... So I think Jehovah's Witnesses, for instance, don't believe in like blood transfusions or organ donation of any kind, which is fine. That's their personal choice. Mm. And I'm never one to argue with people's faith. I also think there's things about age. So I remember when we were doing the kidney transplant, there was this guy there that was like, yeah, but suppose my kids need a kidney one day. And I was like... You don't even have kids yet. Like, relax. But I do think if you're, there is this kind of natural cycle of life, and this sounds very harsh to say, but my mom was like in her 60s when this happened. No, younger. She was in her 50s. But I don't know. I think medical experts would say if she was 90, would I be giving her a kidney? Mm. I think there are practical considerations about the natural course of life and how much we're allowing science to make impositions on the natural order of things.
Yeah.
And I think even if you do have religious beliefs, as you said, like some people who are Jehovah's Witnesses, it's a total like no. And like, mm-hmm. as you said, like that's their belief, that's fine. But I think there'll be some people that it just comes from lack of ignorance,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, they think that their mum's just going to be cut open and they're just left. Just for, like, and it's like, no, it's not like that. Like she will still be able to bury her. You'll still be able to, you know, take care of her body. You know what I mean? 100%. Like, I think there's a lot of ignorance of how the actual procedure itself happens and goes down. Because I think some people would worry about what happens to the actual body afterwards.
It just feels a bit scary. Do you know what I mean? Like, Holby C. Is that Holby C? The one that used to be in hospital?
Oh, yeah, Holby C.
Yeah.
I had to start watching that shit. When you're watching it open up and you're seeing ding, 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 it's going to be inside. No, it is quite scary. And that's why for me, when I think about organ donation, I think about the frustration game, because it's just like, I just think about being cut open.
But the truth of it is that the donor's part is actually way easier than the recipient. So for me, my surgery lasted an hour, I think, maybe an hour and a half, because literally they did the surgery laparoscopically. So laparoscopically is essentially where they just make really tiny incisions and they stick a tube in and they kind of almost suck the kidney out.
Oh, wow.
So literally I have one small scar above my belly button, two small scars. And when I say small, they're like, how big is this, guys? I don't have...
Like 2 centimeters.
Yeah, two centimeters, if that, on either side of my tummy. And then I have a scar right by my bikini area, which is comparable to what you would get if you had a C-section. It's actually smaller than that. And so really simple. There aren't that many marks. You actually have to see me naked in order to know that, you know, that's happened. But then on my mom's... No, because if I wear a swimsuit, you actually can't see it, you know? Like, even if I'm wearing really a bikini, deep, it's not that massive. It's not a massive cut open. Whereas on my mom's side, they had to literally open her up. So she had a scar going all across the way, all across her tummy. They had to take out the bad kidney and then put the actual kidney in. So her surgery was like 2.5 to 3 hours. Her recovery period.
Are they on the same day?
Yeah, same day. Because you have a limited time period for living, for both living and dead, deceased organ donations to get the organ into the body. And her, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. There's a really funny story about that, which I don't know if I should tell on the podcast, but I will. But my mom's side, she was in the hospital recovering for like a month. I was going to say part of the reason that I was in the hospital for as long as I was, okay, so the first couple of days after you come out of surgery, or the first day, you're like in ICU or whatever, and you're kind of groggy, you're kind of in pain or whatever. And then you transfer over to the floor and you can't be on the same floor as the person you're on the floor below because, like, infection. They're more prone to infection and everything. As I said, my recovery was just like any normal recovery. So maybe 3 days in, the hospital I was at was a teaching hospital in the States. So obviously a lot of, like, student nurses coming in. Have I told you the story before?
I didn't see where I was going.
And so one of the things that you have to do within the first 3 days or the first week is, like, you know, you have stitches and stuff, so they have to help you walk around. They also have to give you stuff to go to the bathroom because obviously they don't want you to strain.
Right.
So a nurse came in to give me a laxative up my, you know,
your anus, bum hole.
Yes. But she put it up the wrong hole.
I did not think it was going this way.
She put it up the wrong hole. And I kept saying to her, you've done it wrong. And she was like, no, I don't think so. She was like, make sure. Because literally, you should go to the bathroom. Once you get a laxative up your ass, you should go to the bathroom within like 20, ASAP, 30 minutes. Like, yeah, it's like almost instantaneous, right? And I was like, my vagina is on fire right now. And you have done it wrong. And literally, like, the doctors had to come in. She had actually put it up the wrong hole. So a lot of me waiting around was because I was delayed in A, getting the laxative. B, they had to, like, treat the fact that the lady had essentially just tried to set my vagina on fire.
You got that fire pussy.
For real. But she should be allowed to be a doctor.
No, she was a nurse.
Oh, she should be allowed to be a nurse.
So I think she's a student.
She was a student nurse. I'm sure she got in trouble for it.
You know, I thought he was going to tell me, like, there was a hot guy that came in.
Oh, yeah, and you're starting.
I like him, so I want to stay here for longer. That's what I thought it was going.
I wish. Oh, my gosh.
You know, like,
so
in something like Casualty, where they have, like, students to come in, they all stand around the body and they're like, so, what does this person have? I always think that must be weird for the patient. It's just laying there, like, and all these students are just staring at you. Okay, even though she's a trainee, sorry, I can't get over this, because even though she's a trainee, she has a vagina.
How do you not know the difference between...
She should know.
They look different, though. Like, a bum hole looks like a bum hole.
Yeah. I was a little bit lost where you're going at first.
It doesn't look cute.
Yeah, no, you know what you're doing.
Your vagina hole looks sexy. No, I'm joking.
And the thing is, she asked me, she was like, do you want to do it or do you want me to do it? But I was so tired that I was like, it's fine, just stick it up my bum hole. It's fine.
I love anal anyway.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, that's actually one of the reasons that I was in the hospital as long as I was for the 2 weeks.
So had that not happened, what's the average time that you're supposed to spend?
They really just want you to be able to have a bowel movement, pee on your own, because I had a catheter in as well. So once they took the catheter out, they want to make sure you can pee within 24 hours.
Is that a bad thing?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Make sure you can walk And just kind of keep an eye on your stitches to make sure that they're okay. And my stitches were also soluble, so it's not even like I had to go back to the hospital to get them taken out. They just kind of dissolve over time.
Mm. Oh, that's yeah. pretty cool. But you know, like, after it happened, like, and I know, like, there was a sense of proudness that you felt, yeah.
What not
was
initially.
It like that? That's what I was going to say, like, what was it? When, like, after it happened, how did you feel?
So I think... For me, it was a little bit different. So initially, I was kind of like, oh, just get me out of this fucking hospital, because I was in there for 2 weeks. I was away from my friends. I wanted to see my mom. So, you know, like it was, I remember the last day that we got to, last day of the hospital when I was getting ready to leave, I asked my sister to come and bring me some stuff to change into. And she brought me like pajamas and I went ape shit on her. I was like, couldn't you bring me some decent clothes that I could leave the hospital in? I've been sitting in pajamas for the past 2 weeks. I literally went mad. So by that time, I was just like kind of itching to get out of the hospital. I spent a week at home recovering. And then I went to, I don't know if anybody else knows what this is, but I went to Appleton ATI, which is like a party weekend in Jamaica. So yeah. I literally went from like being in the hospital
you
to
were like, girl, I need to live.
I need to show this fire pussy off.
But yeah, so after that, and then I think almost immediately after that, my mom's kidney started to reject. So I went immediately back into like, how can I save her mode? So I was like, oh, is there a way that we can fix this? Like, can we just switch back out the kidneys or something like that? And obviously, that wasn't the case. And then that took about 6 months. And then after that, it was kind of like, mommy's okay. We can go back to normal. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until we started, like, talking to people about their stories and hearing about their stories that I was actually like, wow, I'm kind of actually proud of the fact that I did this. And not only the fact that I did it, but the fact that we're able, by doing it, I'm able to have convinced other people that they should be doing it as well.
Did you get closer to your mom as a result of it?
I mean, my mom was always like super close to me. So I think it made us fight a little bit more because I was very much aware of how much I wanted her to take care of herself. Both my mom and I were smokers before the surgery took place. And I remember maybe like a week before the surgery, we were staying in this apartment and I was on one balcony and she was on the other. And she was on that balcony above me. And I saw a cigarette butt drop down onto my balcony. And she and I got in the hugest fight. Bear in mind, I was also smoking on the balcony below. She just didn't know.
What a hypocrite. You shouldn't be smoking.
Yeah, but she got caught. She got caught.
I was smoking, though, but you shouldn't be smoking.
But what it actually did was it brought my dad and I together. So I remember when we did this, a lot of people in my family and just like extended friends were like, you shouldn't do this. How can you take a kidney from your daughter? She's only 21, 22, whatever, whatever. Just like ignorant people not even trying to understand a perspective. And my dad and I did not have a good relationship at all. Like growing up, we just, due to various reasons that I'm sure I've spoken on the podcast before, we didn't get along. So the day before the surgery, he showed up. I didn't know he was there. So when I got out of the surgery, he was there. And he actually just came really hands-on. He was the one who was, like, combing my hair, helping to bathe me, helping me to, like, get back up on my feet. He would wheel me upstairs to go and see my mom, even though they weren't on good terms. And it kind of broke the ice between us, and it made us that much closer. Like, after that, he came to visit me in England, and we had really honest and open conversations about the fact that, you know, we didn't have a good relationship and talked about how we could work to rebuild that. So I think had that not happened and had he not had that knee-jerk reaction to potentially losing his daughter, we wouldn't have been as close as we were. So it definitely, in that sense, had a huge impact on bringing the family members that I wasn't close to. It reconciled a lot of the issues that we had.
Is there something quite special about the scars as well that get left behind? Because I imagine with that kind of thing, I know it sounds hella corny, but like every time you look at it, you're kind of reminded.
Do you know what's funny is that after the scars, they asked me, they were like, we do have like a plastic surgeon on hand if you want to kind of reduce the scarring as much as possible, particularly the bikini one. And I said no at the time because I was like, yeah, these are my battle scars and like this is what, you know. But then it's funny, as I kind of continued and time passed, I became really self-conscious of them, particularly around men. So like you know, if it was like the first time that I was naked in front of someone, or like if I had a boyfriend and they hadn't seen my scars before,
feel like I need to explain what
exactly
what it is.
Yeah. So I was just like, oh, just don't pay attention to the scars, they're just blah 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 blah. So if I hadn't told the story up until that point, it was no time for me to explain that I'd given my mom a kidney. And it was more about, will they find the scars unattractive? And it made me really self-conscious. Mm. Until I shot with Henry. So Henry, big up Henry Robinson, who's a photographer.
Is it on that shoot where your hair is curling? Or yeah. Back?
And it was one of the first nude shoots I'd ever done. And I was just like, oh yeah, feel free to edit the scars out. And he's like, why would I do that? He was like, that's one of the best things about you. Like, that's one of the best things that's what makes the picture beautiful. And it actually really made me appreciate. So now when I look at those pictures, I'm like, oh damn, that does look good. Like, it builds character, you know, or it gives my body character, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I feel like in a weird way, that like, because your mom's obviously passed now, that's like a closeness to her. That makes sense? Because every time, I hate when boys do this, yeah, but when boys, like, mums die or they're alive, they always tattoo mum. What I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, but now I have the actual
scars.
But you
actually have like a real, it's not a tattoo, this is the real.
This is a real deal, the really dealy.
Yeah.
Is there anything like that you wish you knew going into it beforehand with hindsight?
No, not really, because we were so well prepared. Like, literally, we had so many sessions. We were allowed to ask so many questions. Our doctors, Dr. Montgomery and Dr. Kraus from Johns Hopkins University, were literally amazing. Why are you laughing?
Because I said, how the hell does she remember their names? And you do this all the time. Like, you remember such specific things.
No, because they literally treated us like family. Like, we went out for dinner together. Wow. Dr. Kraus was... Dr. Kraus is Jewish.
Did he pay?
He did. Dr. Kraus was Jewish, and he invited us to Seder dinner with his family. Aww. Like, literally, they really, really, really loved my mom and embraced her. So, I mean, I remember they gave me, like, a plaque. They gave me, when I graduated from undergrad, they gave me a graduation present, even though I had
you
given
stay
the
in touch after?
Yeah, even now. So, when stuff pops up, and when my mom got cancer, Dr. Kraus came to visit my mom in the hospital. Like, Dr. Montgomery came out to the Cayman Islands and did sessions with the dialysis nurses and doctors there to make sure that they were up to speed and up to date. They've really done amazing. They've supported us beyond even the kidney surgery, 100%.
Is the healthcare in Jamaica a lot better than the healthcare here?
I think it's more personable. So I would say that...
like, when you go to the hospital, you're seeing the same person that you saw...
Not even that, but I think people are just nicer. Like, my biggest issue with NHS has been that there's this kind of clinical disconnect from recognizing that you're dealing with human beings, and they're just looking at you like an extra bed, you know, because they are, like, tight on resources, and I get that nurses are inundated and everything. But even though Jamaica has less resources, the nurses are nicer. They will go above and beyond. I can call a doctor at 2 o'clock in the morning and... they'll answer a question, or if there's an emergency, you know. And they also, I think, are more creative or more proactive about reconciling issues because they have less resources. So it's like, okay, we can't do this because we don't have a particular machine, but how can we fix the situation? So I think the patient is always more paramount. That's what I've experienced anyway.
This is the Dope Black Women Podcast. So now, as promised, we're going to hear a bit from Rachel Rosen, who is the regional manager of the London Organ Donation Team. And she's going to tell us a bit more about why organ donation is so important in the Black community, some core statistics for you to find out, and a bit more about the new legislation on organ donation that is coming out this spring.
Hi, I'm Rachel, one of the managers for the London Organ Donation Team. I'm also a nurse, and I've been involved in organ donation for the past 15 years. This started when I worked in the intensive care unit and I would care for patients that would become organ donors before moving to be a specialist nurse in organ donation for NHS blood and transplant. Organ donation is so important in every community. However, in the Black community, we know that donation rates are much lower than what they are in the white community. This is because families do not say yes when asked about organ donation. This is a problem because if you are waiting for a life-saving organ transplant, then you would be more likely to get a match from someone of the same ethnic background. This is because we use a person's blood group and something called tissue typing to match organs. And so because we are not getting consent for organ donation, this means that people from a black background will wait even longer on the transplant waiting list and could even die. We know that there are a lot of misconceptions in the black community surrounding organ donation. But I don't think that people realise that if they're not prepared to donate, then people from their own community will die. A lot of families use religion as a reason for organ donation to not go ahead. However, all religions are in support of organ donation. And as a nurse, we support many families from diverse cultures and faiths to ensure that their needs are met. We do this on an individual basis by asking families how we can support them. People from black communities are more likely to need an organ transplant because they are more susceptible to illnesses such as diabetes and high blood pressure, which can lead to kidney failure, meaning a person could need a kidney transplant. Because of this, patients from black communities are overrepresented on the transplant waiting list and therefore are more likely to die waiting for a transplant. Myths and barriers to organ donation are more prevalent in black communities. We hear things like, a doctor would not save a person's life as they want their organs. This is not true. Every effort would be made to save the life of someone as a priority. It's only when a doctor knows that a person has died or is about to die that the emphasis would move to end-of-life care considerations. And organ donation decisions would be explored in the same way that any funeral arrangements or anything relating to a person's faith would also be explored. The law around organ donation is changing in May of this year in England. With the changes, all adults covered by the law will be considered as having agreed to donate their own organs when they die, unless they record a decision not to donate. Even when the law change happens, you still have a choice as to whether or not you will be an organ donor, and your family will still be involved before organ donation goes ahead. Whatever your decision is, make this decision clear to your family and your closest friends to ensure that your decision is honoured. We hope that the up and coming law change will help promote and encourage more people to have the conversation about organ donation, and that more people and families will support donation and enable more lives to be saved. So please think about organ donation, please make your decision, and please tell your family and friends what that decision is. Thank you.
So as Rachel pointed out, donation rates for organs are much lower for black people than they are for white people. And because the blood type and the tissue type is so important to get a match on, we really think it's important that these conversations start becoming more regular in our families, in our homes, with our friends. So I hope this can inspire some sort of change. This spring, the law is changing, and you'll now have to opt out if you don't want your organs to be donated after your passing automatically. You will still have a choice whether to be an organ donor, and your families will still be involved before organ donation goes ahead. For more information, please visit www.organdonation.nhs.uk, and we'll share some more useful links on our social media accounts.
So thanks guys for listening. But before we wrap up, I just want to say that obviously, as Liv's pointed out, or as we've pointed out today, you know, organ donation is like a really personal choice. And I think everybody just needs to be really well educated before they make that decision. And as you said, kind of have the conversations with their families. However, I do think that blood donation is something that's really, it's an easier choice to make, and it's something that's still really important to the black community as well. You know, it takes nothing to give blood. It's really easy to sign up, and you can save somebody's life. And again, bar religious reasons, I think that's also something that we should be informing ourselves about. So thanks so much for listening, guys. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. On Twitter and Instagram, we are Dope Black Women 1. And on Facebook, we are just Dope Black Women. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.
All the way black.
Blackly black.
Oh, yeah. We don't have a guess.
I was like, why are you staring at me?
Oh, guys, you have to go back to the old school where all three of us say it together.
Okay, come.
Skirt, Lauren, as we do that.
We'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.
All the way black.
Blackly black.
Blacktastic.
my gosh, what was that, Leanne?
What?
There was porn on your phone.
Oh, it's my porn.
Are you joking?
Yeah. No, I'm not joking. Sorry. Wait, that was you? Yeah, that was me.
I thought you were on Instagram.
No.
No, sorry for exposing you.